So everybody, thank you for tuning in to 90 Proof Wisdom Today. I'm Jeremy Barker. This is my guest, Chris Wetton. He's a captain over at Weber Fire District. And we're going to have some fun conversations today. A lot of it's going to be the career in fire service and our dedication to it and some of the trauma, mentally, physically, that it creates inside our lives. So hope you tune in today. Listen. Hopefully there's some value here for you. If there is, please drop it in comments. If there's not, please say so as well. Don't forget to subscribe. And go ahead, Robert, let's roll some intro, my friend.
If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle.
Houston, we're copying. Everything is
going. We shall fight on the beaches and in the streets. We shall never surrender.
I'm in it just to rewrite history, cause I'm in the mood to label us the leaders of the new school. This ain't for the radio, can't find this on YouTube. This the type of killing that these critics ain't used to.
You're a group of happy rebels. You've said no to the rules of the game and the regulations of the day. You've said no to the conventional wisdom. You're all originals.
In this day and age, I got time for innovation. Time to be creative. Time to make the waste of my time.
Okay, everybody, I'm Jeremy Barker. I'm with 90 Proof Wisdom, and this here is Chris Wetton with Weber Fire District. We're going to have some fun today, talk a little bit about fire, EMS, and how we've done with it and how it's affected us personally and mentally, physically, in every way. And Chris has been kind enough to come in, share some of his experiences. He's 18 years deep into his career. And 20 years total fire, but 18 full-time, currently serving as a captain, as I said. And anyway, Chris, this is going to be a good conversation.
Yeah, thanks for letting me come.
I'm glad you're here. So we had a little opportunity in this little intro to kind of share some little stories about what we think in the very beginning. But as we were saying, fire, EMS, and the call of duty that we serve just publicly and domestically.
Yeah.
In our own, typically, if we can afford it, by the way, when I say in our own neighborhood, unfortunately, most of the fire service is underpaid, underserved, and we have to drive, well, we have friends in Malad, and I mean, hours away to just come serve. Greg, he lives in Preston, is working for Unified, right? Yeah. It's just really hard to afford to live where we serve, which I think should be a red flag for all council members, whether it be commissioners, city councilmen, county councilmen, the state. It all just needs to be addressed when people can't even afford to live in their local area. It's something that's really kind of sad. And then on top of that, here's my biggest beef that I currently have with councils and with city commissioners and with department heads, regardless of what they are. And I speak them freely, just so you know, is that I feel sometimes that they have, it's easy for us to look over. We are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Yeah.
And you basically don't have a voice, right? You can't go in and tell someone about the call and who you helped and how it mentally affected you, because you don't want to show weakness and you want to make sure you're still fit for duty, right? And then you see, you don't have the money to defend yourself if you get yourself into a predicament, right? And it seems like a lot of cities use police, fire, EMS as the grab all, right? Like, we can go after this because they can't fight back.
Yeah.
So Dan Lillienquist is a perfect example with his tier two. They came after tier two retirement. He calls it the saving grace to Utah retirement, which, by the way, wasn't in a mess, regardless of his position. It destroyed a lot of our ability to recruit, our ability to retain good employees. And I felt, and I may be completely wrong, and Dan, if you want to come talk to us, we'd be happy to have you. It'd be quite a bearable ride. It'd be fun. But ultimately, I feel like he went to the smallest voice, the ones that can't fight, that do fight for you every day, and maybe not you personally. As the person on the call, it may even be somebody outside of the county or the city that's passing through that happens to go through some horrific experience while traveling through it. But we are there, we're ready, we're willing and able, sometimes not mentally, sometimes not physically, but it isn't a platform where you can expose your weaknesses freely without fear of retribution. Right. And I believe most cities and counties and department heads haven't set up the ability for a firefighter to expose his weaknesses or lift his skirt and say, you know, hey, here's my problems, man. Yep. Here's my underbelly. This is what I'm going through. I need some help. They can't afford to help themselves financially, no. Right?
100%.
I mean, you think about some of the things that whether it be us or someone else, and we can all point fingers at different people that have had problems, whether it be drugs, alcohol, depression, suicidal tendencies, actual suicidal actions that we've had in our own department, right? Which is horrific. It's just about, 7 years now, isn't it, since we lost the last one to that? Has it been seven?
No, we just lost one last year.
To suicide?
Yeah.
In our department?
Not in our department.
That's what I was saying, in our department.
In our department, Oh, shoot.
I think it's 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years.
Right?
Yeah.
Which was awful. And here's the problem, is because of the kind of the mute button that I think more or less that we feel like we have to have on ourselves to make sure people trust us to be able to act in the best way to benefit others, we have to put this false shield on sometimes.
Yeah.
We work 48 hours a shift, right? And then we go home for four, supposedly. But typically, we have to go work another job or two and a side gig, carpet, flooring, trees, for example, just to kind of rub two nickels together.
Yep.
And then when you show up, after you've been gone for 48 hours and your poor spouse, husband or wife, whatever, has had to deal with the freaking kids, run them to school, get them dressed, and then you show them your fancy paycheck, and they're like, I'm going through all this for this. Are you serious? I mean, this has been that was a battle at my house. And fortunately for me, most of the time, I'm like, I'd get home in the driveway. I'd try to open the garage door and that some won't go up. And I'm like, hey, Shannon, did you pay the power bill? I'm not kidding you. More than once. And I'd look over to the front doorknob and be like, there's that pink tag again.
Oh, shoot.
I'm like, you have to pay the freaking power bill. Like, she's like, I didn't want to tell you. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, whatever. So, but this is a common problem inside your local firehouse and police house around the nation.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Whether it be full-time or volunteer, many of them struggle financially.
Yeah.
And that's a small component. And then we get into other components like mental issues or physical issues. They have an injury. You know, how do you say it? I don't have the sick leave. I don't have the vacation leave to cover my ability to do it. And when you're making sub $1,000 every 2 weeks in this day and age, you can't afford to miss a shift or miss 2 weeks, or let's call it, when I broke my back in my sternum, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Right. That was a big downer. Fortunately, I had the time from Roy, vacation and sick leave that was able to cover it, and they were gracious in it.
Yeah. But well, I mean, we're lucky. I mean, they try and take care of us really good. You know what I mean? And there are things, there's limitations everywhere, you know? I think one of the biggest reasons I wanted to come on and talk is like the mental health aspect of things. Like, that's really affected me. I'm gonna get emotional, bro.
Good. Do it. This is what we like. I'll join right into the party. I'm really weak that way.
I got vomit. You get weak and somebody else starts throwing up. Yeah. I'm gonna start crying too.
I'm a sympathy crier.
That's me, bro. Mental health, like, you get into fire service and it's like big, tough dudes and adrenaline junkies and let's do this.
Well, you're no little guy.
I was when I started. Right. Trust me, I was a little guy. But and you look at, and everybody praises the guy that's just strong, you know. He doesn't show weakness. He doesn't, he doesn't show emotion. He's just stoic, you know what I mean? And it's like, and I thought that's who I was. That's who I wanted to be. That's who, you know, like, you don't show that. You don't emulate that. And, I tried to do that for too long and it wears and wears and wears and then finally it explodes.
It does explode. Yeah. And, you know, I think stoic, no matter who you look at, some of the strongest people, biggest personalities we've ever met.
Yeah.
And you get in the opportunity. Last night, I won't say who I was talking to on the phone, but he's extremely well known, national news format.
Yeah.
Extremely built.
Yeah.
We see him all the time.
Yeah.
Just, we went through the conversations of past depression, suicidal tendency, near act of suicide, and his roller coaster of his life, going from one place to work, you know, super success, to working at Home Depot, to then national news stage.
Wow.
And then his own TV show on cable. And it was an hour and a half long conversation of both of us crying. Right.
Yeah.
So here's a guy that you look at every day, and he's a beefcake, and he's got through it, and he's this guy that has a TV show and news, and you're like, and then there's an emotional conversation. Yeah. So even those guys that you think are bulletproof, it's okay to cry.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay to have mental struggle.
Oh, yeah.
I have no problem saying in the past that I had depression issues and I had suicidal tendencies. Why? Because I think every single person on this planet, if they're human, have them.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been one of those things we had to keep in a drawer and not let anybody know that we struggle with, which makes it even kind of magnifies this problem.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the idea of this.
Yeah.
The whole format is like, hey, you're not weak. You're normal.
Yeah.
You're human. And it just makes you a more lovable person.
Well, that's good. And it's funny to say that, because if anybody showed weakness, I think that you would have compassion on that person. You know what I mean? But then when you look at your own self and you're looking inside yourself, you're like, I can't show weakness. I can't show weakness. I can't show weakness. And it's something that we have to overcome and understand that we can overcome it. And then feel comfortable doing it. You know,
how do you think it got categorized? Depression or PTSD or any of these minor things that even relationship wise as weakness? Where did that ever start?
I don't know.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. I mean, when you look at it, it takes really strong people to get through it. And when we know that each of us have gone in it, that it shouldn't be ever categorized as weakness. It should be just categorized as life.
Yeah.
And some of the things that make us the better person.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I think there's a time and a place for it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like you got to, we go on a call and it's hitting the fan. You know what I mean? And you can't start crying in the middle of a call. You know what I mean? No matter how tragic it is and stuff like that, you got to hold it together. But then after that, you should be able to let your emotions go and to be able to talk about it. And I don't know why we do that. I don't know where that comes from. I know it's there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think we, as a crew, I haven't met anybody that really gets depressed on call. There's some stuff that gets scary. And then you'll just say, hey man, will you do me a favor? Just go out to the ambulance and hang out and go get me a gurney or whatever. And when people see you're getting a little bit too angry or a little bit frustrated, you'll get to go get the gurney key. Like, hey man, do me a favor, go get the gurney or something to get you off the floor.
Yep.
But we've had the opportunity to run lots and lots of calls. And I can say, as our teams that are in this service, they're strong enough to hold it through calls and make competent decisions, and they execute with utmost professionalism.
Oh yeah.
But to your point, there's got to be a time where you can just shed.
Yeah.
And how do you get that, right? I mean, how do you get to the point where it's accepted and you have a format in which you can go through and address it? We let's say, for example, you go through a marital issue and then you have a call that was earth-shaking. You're right, because it's too close to home.
Yep.
And then you have no money in the bank. And it's your second shift of a 48. And someone pops in to measure a mustache or check your shoes to see if you're in the right gear.
Yeah.
And then you get a write up over something that's so minor without even asking, like, hey, man, you're normally not that guy.
Yeah.
Is there something like off key before we go attacking you and putting this in a long term file?
Yeah.
That ends up affecting your ability maybe to even retain that job, let alone get another one, because as we said earlier, reputation hurts.
Yeah. Luckily, I don't think our department's like
yours
that.
Is.
We're lucky.
You're one of the best departments I know.
Yeah. No, we have a great department that way. You know what I mean? It's like I don't have to worry, or not necessarily worry. You do your job and things go good. You know what I mean? You're doing what you need to do and things go good. And I'm lucky that I work where I work and I have the crew that I have and things like that. I think people don't look at it. You start your career and you're thinking, I can handle anything. I'm invincible. You know what I mean? And I can go on this call and it's
not going to
affect me, you know? And I don't know where you hit that stage or what year it is that you stop handling it. You know what I mean? Or you stop processing it and your mind can't process it. And,
how far were you in when you started seeing some curveballs in the way you reacted to calls?
Oh, shoot. I was probably 10 years, I think, is when I was like, okay, that call's affecting me. You know what I mean? And it's like, that call shouldn't affect me. It's never affected me before, but that call's affecting me. But how do you get rid of it? And that's one thing that I think that we have a hard time is guys don't know how to allow our minds to process it. You know what I mean? And people are like, oh, go to a counselor. Oh, go talk to this person.
Yeah, but how do they relate?
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. How do they relate? And then on top of that, what if you already have a mental illness? You know what I mean?
Right.
What if you already have something else that's going on in the background and you don't know it, you know?
So, and I think a lot of us, we don't have a great system to help us find it.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What if we don't have a system that helps us realize what may be the issue, yep. right? That we've been struggling our whole life, which, oh, that's just Chris.
Yep.
Oh, that's just Jeremy.
Yep.
That's our write-off. That's our go-to, yep. right? That's just Chris. Don't worry about it. That's just Chris.
Yep.
Or you hear that. It's just how he is.
Yep.
But why is it?
Yeah.
Right. And we haven't had the opportunity, or is there a system that helps us get there to, and again, we don't want to address it typically because we're afraid of what could be retribution. And I could say, just like you did, I think Weber currently in its current administration does a great job of working through the understanding of what may be going on. We had a firefighter just a couple of years ago and there was some pushback on how long it was taking to take action.
Yeah.
But, you know, in my response to some of the people would be, hey, look, guys, if they're doing it that way for him, the good news,
they're going to do that way for you.
They're going to do it that way for you. Hopefully. So don't think you're at a quick trigger yeah. action point.
Yeah.
That they will work with you and try to get to the problem and give you multiple opportunities to rectify whatever it is or seek counseling or seek whatever it is that it is it's going to take to get you better to be fit for duty
yeah.
in your role. I mean, they've done some role shifting to kind of sort it through, which is fine. And I think it's important. They need to have the right guy in the right seat at the right time.
Yep.
But they're not saying, okay, well, you got to go then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Which is a godsend for every employee at Weber.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And hopefully a lot of departments around here, and I think a lot of departments around here are like that. You know what I mean? We have in Weber County, and speak for them because I work with a lot of them, but a lot of the admins here are really good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their shortcomings and everybody can do better in certain places. No one's perfect, but I think for the most part, we try and watch out for each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, like, I didn't know I had a mental illness. You know what I mean? I didn't know that.
So what is your mental illness then?
I'm bipolar type 2.
Type 2. So what is that for the people that don't know?
You have... depressive episodes that last so long. And then you have, I have hypomania.
So what is that in layman's terms?
So for me, like I'll go on 3 hours of sleep and I'll be good. I'll go to sleep at midnight, wake up at 3 and I'm ready to go. And, my mind races like crazy, like thought to thought to thought to thought.
It's hard to pin it down.
Yeah. And it's like, hey, I can do this and I can do this and I can do this and I can start working on this. And that goes good for about a week. And sometimes not a week.
So it's almost like an enhanced multiplied ADD.
Yeah.
Times a multiplier.
Yeah. And right. And the doctors, it's like, you're on speed, you know, and you love it. You're euphoric. You feel like you can do whatever. You can get all this accomplished.
Then you're exhausted.
And then you go down again and then you're depressed. And it caused, and I didn't realize it. I didn't know what was going on. It caused a lot of issues in my marriage. It caused a lot of issues in different relationships. And finally, once I was diagnosed, I could look back and go, oh my gosh.
Maybe it was me.
Wow. This has been going on for a long time. Been going on for a long time. But there's that thing is, oh, that's Chris. Oh, that's how he is.
Right.
That's what's going on.
Sure.
Just, and you deal with it. You know what I mean? And now that I have a name for it, now that I have endured it and talked to other people that have it and am still trying to figure it out.
Hopefully it's a forever chase, to be honest with you, so you can learn every day more and more about yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the good thing about finding a diagnosis is healthy, for one, it gives you some answers. And then when you start acting in a position or you start finding yourself weighing and you're like, oh, hey, wait a second. This isn't them. I got to reel this back in.
Right.
And this is me. And I need to be apologetic and sincerely apologetic
right.
and come back and say, hey, man, like what I just did back there, and I kind of accused you of being the problem. I have a problem and I'm sorry. Right.
And part of my problem is being in that situation. You don't see it.
Sure.
Especially
if you don't know a diagnosis.
Right. Well, even with a diagnosis, I don't see some of the stuff that I do. I don't see like everything's extreme. So if I'm happy, it's extreme.
You're for it. Yeah.
If I'm down, it's extreme. If I'm angry, it's extreme. But through my own eyes, looking at it, it looks normal.
Yeah.
So I've yelled at people and straight out felt like we were having a conversation. And I swear, like I would have put my life savings on it. No, we were just talking and people were like, no, you weren't.
Yeah, we've had those conversations before, actually.
You were yelling at so-and-so, and I'm like, no, I swear to God, I wasn't yelling at anybody.
Yeah.
And
I've been on a receiving end.
Not from me.
Yeah, from you. I'll tell you about it later, but don't worry about it. It's not like, you know where I went to, though? And that's, it's just Chris.
It's just, that's exactly
where I went to. And it was a minor, it was dumb, right? But I'm like, good Lord, dude, turn it down a couple notches. Like, where are you coming from? Why are you freaking out over something silly?
But coming from my eyes, if I were to replay it through my own eyes.
Like, why did you think I was mad?
Like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
And now that I look back, I can go, wow, their facial expression changed. Wow, their demeanor changed. Wow, right. Their attitude changed.
They're all of a sudden defensive.
But I don't see that in the moment
until
I retrospectively look at it. And that's bad. And that's hard. And that's one thing that that's really affected me. And it's caused a lot of problems in my whole life. You know what I mean? I've lost friendships. I lost a marriage.
How long were you married?
18 years.
18 years. So quite a while.
Yeah. And bipolar affected me throughout my whole marriage and stuff like that. But then the trauma that we go on and that we see.
And the time away from home, not being able to fix it.
Yeah.
Being in a lockup. I mean, we refer to it kind of lockup, but not negative sense.
No. Yeah.
But you can't leave this station.
Oh, no.
Imagine going to work as a normal individual. And for those of you that aren't in the service of any kind, police, fire. With fire guys, they're going for 48 hours and they're in the middle of a heated conversation at home. And if you want to add gas to a fire in a marriage, go on shift for 48 hours.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
When you haven't found a resolution.
Yep.
And it's a tough spot that we ask these guys to do.
Well, then get off shift and not go home and fix it. Because you have your other job.
Right. Another job.
And then go to another job.
And then who's not important?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
But all we're trying to do is buy mac and cheese for heaven's sakes. And hopefully we can get some hot dogs in it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's really where we're at.
Oh yeah. 100%.
And it's an unfortunate reality that they sit in. And I don't think most of the audience knows right now that a lot of the departments, even our own, are hiring in that $16 an hour range to start.
Yeah.
Well, In-N-Out Burger is at $16.50 to start currently with full benefits, 100%.
Yeah.
Right. And these guys, and I'm not demeaning In-N-Out Burger guys at all, because that would take $16.50 for me to do that anyway. And I'm not saying I would do Dairy Queen. I don't give two craps where I work, but we have to feed our family.
Yeah.
And it's a tall order. Well, these guys can go to work for 8 hours and come home. We have to go to work for 48 hours and sacrifice birthdays, Christmas. And I'm not trying to play this sympathy card. All I'm saying is it needs to be looked at and addressed and appreciated and taken care of, because there's guys like yourself that have had the full sacrificial lamb, right? You've gone through marital issues. And at that point, did you know that you had bipolar at that point? Bipolar, I guess.
Yeah. So my ex, we're divorced, but thank God she went and she's like, something's not right. So she started looking up stuff and she's like, she didn't even tell me. She's like, we got a doctor's appointment. You got to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. What the hell is going on? And she went in and she's like, we sat down with the doctor and the doctor's talking to me. And I'm like, I don't even know why I'm here. What are we doing? You know, she's like, here, this is what I'm. And she started explaining what she was seeing. And the doctor's like, oh, he's like, I think you have bipolar. And I was like, what?
Like, why am I here? I thought this was for her.
Yeah. What are we doing here? And he's like, yeah, you're. And I had been diagnosed with ADHD and a bunch of other different things and been on different medications and tried all different types of stuff. And
because you couldn't focus. That was what your point was.
I couldn't focus, but then I was on depressed meds. I was on all different types of things because I was depressed and then I'd be ADD. I just all over the place, you know? And then I finally got diagnosed, right? And there's so many different meds and there's so many different things that they're trying to figure out, and different meds respond to different people and it's just, there's just a ton of different stuff, different ways of treatment and different things like that, you know? And one thing that I didn't realize is that the trauma from the fire service, the things that we see, pediatric calls, drownings, hangings, those things shooting, were affecting me.
Yeah.
And they were building up and I didn't have a release. I didn't know how to let go. Does that make sense?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So,
you know, what's weird. So when I know I was broken, towards I was at 7 years at Roy under the rescue. And when somebody says, how do you deal with the call? How do you deal with it?
Yeah.
And when I said, you know what, to be honest with you, I could give two flying shits if this whole restaurant got shot. We were at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Could get shot up. Yeah. I could care less. As long as I'm oh, I'm not bloody. Good.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? I'm like, what do you mean, what? I'm like, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, that's a broken response.
Yeah.
How could that not bother me?
Yeah.
Right? But truly, I thought when they asked the question, I'm like, oh, I don't care.
Mine was, I hope they hit me first.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad view.
Yeah.
So you were wanting to take the bullet for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, hey, hopefully they hit me because I'm going through this rough spot. And I don't want to shoot myself, but hopefully I take the bullet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a tough spot to get to, too.
It was bad. So, yeah.
So what, from like just back to that thing, when you realize that you are so broken, right? When you're like, when people say, what do you do? How do you respond to those tough calls? You're like, okay, I think it's just by not caring.
Yeah.
But that's really just the shield.
Yeah.
And I think after it kind of just shook me to my core, like, how did I just, this person, by the way, wonderful person, the biggest heart in the planet.
Yeah.
One of those guys, well, he's heavy in the church. Right. And he's like, what? Like, dude, you're a really nice guy. How could you not care if this whole thing got wiped out? I'm like, what do you mean? You don't care? I'm like, no. Yeah. And then I got home and I'm like, that's a broken response.
Yeah.
Right. And then I started thinking, okay, that's not really how I feel. Right. No. That's not really how I feel, but you don't know how else to shield it. You just have to say you don't care.
Right.
Yeah. Out front, outwardly.
And I think everybody does something different. And that's the hard thing is to say like, well, I don't feel that way. So I must not be going through the same thing and that's a different thing with bipolar too. And other mental illnesses is you can read a book and say, oh, these are all the signs and symptoms. But just like a heart attack, you could be having chest pain and it doesn't go down your left arm. You can still be having a heart attack. You could have back pain.
Yeah, neck pain, sore throat.
Yeah, and it's still a heart attack. You're just not experiencing it the same way as somebody else.
The textbook.
And it's like, oh, okay, so what am I experiencing? What am I dealing with? And I would read it and go, oh, well, I have this symptom, but I don't have these symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have these symptoms right now, but I did last week. But I wasn't looking at last week or 2 weeks ago or a month ago. And so it took somebody else, my ex, to look at it and say, no, this is what's going on.
So did you address it while you were married?
Yeah, I was getting help.
Soon before you got divorced, do you care if I ask? Just
It was a couple years.
So 2 years, you kind of found out what the problem was. You tried to work through those issues for a couple of years as you, tried to conquer that battle.
So it got bad. So trying to figure it out, hey, I'm bipolar, trying to work through this, not let anybody know because it's embarrassing as hell.
Well, at first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's like, hey,
for me, I don't care. That's why I'm here. Right?
Yeah. Good.
I tried to work it out on my own, tried to like just hide it and hey, this is what I'm going through and I'm going to deal with it on my own and I'm going to learn about it and no one's going to know the difference. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so, some of the medications that you put you on have crazy side effects. So I was on a medication and it gave me some wicked side effects, heart palpitations. I put on 20 pounds in a couple of weeks. I couldn't breathe. I was having all kinds of problems.
So like, I got to get off this one.
Yeah. So I called the doctor and I was like, hey, I'm having like serious heart palpitations and I can't breathe. And he's like, oh crap. All right. He's like, stop the medication. Well, that was the worst thing he could have done. Is he cold?
You should have. Yeah. No, you got to wean.
Yeah. Well, I was like, okay, I'm just doing what the doctor said. I'm going to stop the medication. And that put me into a spiral.
The other direction.
Yeah. I went downhill fast. And, my wife and I were going through some issues, or my ex-wife, and we were going through some stuff. And, I got to a point where I was like, I don't care anymore. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Well, it's easiest, right? It's like that Band-Aid, just rip the Band-Aid off. Because this has caused me problems.
Yeah.
So I need to find an answer. So I'll get rid of this one. And we pull trigger action.
Yep.
Right. And sometimes in hindsight, you're like, man, I'm quick. And I have that problem. I have to realize I have to kind of pull back a little bit. And unfortunately, the people that are the easiest to take the problem out, especially in this career, is who?
Yeah.
Your spouse.
Yep.
Why? They can't fire you. They're usually understanding. Yep. I mean, yes, they can fire you from being your husband or wife, vice versa. But they're the one that's most understanding of your scenario. And they, in our hearts, feel like, well, you should understand.
Yeah.
Right. But they're just human too.
Yeah.
Right. They can only handle so much understanding.
Yep.
So.
Well, and she did. And she fought for me. She helped me out. And it was just a bad time, a bunch of events. And a lot of different things was going on and I couldn't figure it out. And I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done. And she made a comment of, you're too much of a coward to do that. And I was like, oh, I can show you how much of a coward I am.
Which is worse to do to your personality.
Yep.
Right.
And so luckily my kids were home and I thought, I've seen that too much. You know what I mean? I've been on those calls and I've seen what it does to family and I've seen what it does. And I was like, okay, I can't do that. Not going to do that. But I still made that threat and I still went to that place and I was still
mentally there.
I was ready to do it. And
granted, when you say do it, it's a suicidal
suicide. Yeah. Oh yeah. I pulled the pistol out and said, here's the trigger, pull it.
Yeah.
And I was stupid. It was wrong.
Yeah. Well, easy to armchair quarterback. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, at the same time, it is stupid. It is wrong.
Yeah.
But guess what? That's where you get broken down to as a human. Yeah. And now, unfortunately, I think a lot of people go through this. And I read some statistics when I was union president for IFF Roy. We were tickling around 80% of firefighters professionally have a thought about suicide, not action, but it's crossed their mind.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And then 40%. Roughly, and these numbers may be completely wrong from now, but this was 2015-ish. 40% have made a plan. 20% have put action to plan, like actually planned out and started acting out their plan. And then about, 3% success rate or something. Thank goodness it's that, but it's really high.
Yeah.
And whether it be physical or whether it be emotional. And then you look at the divorce rates and it's almost double the national average, right? In police and fire.
Oh yeah.
And the same for the poor police guys. I mean, these guys are running calls that they can't talk about. They're not, I don't feel this way in Weaver County and most of Utah. I think there's a hatred towards police like much of the nation. I'm not a cop, so I don't know how bad it feels to be one. And they see stuff and they probably get words from people that are different than what I see from the outside. But overall, I think there's an overwhelming appreciation and respect for police officers.
I would agree.
And there's one advantage we have over police officers as well. There's many. First off, they didn't pass the test and we already know that.
Right.
Right. But I mean, ultimately, when we get in a truck, Chris, guess who we have?
Yeah. He has a partner.
Yeah. What do they have? Yeah. No one.
Yep.
They just saw something. They're on most of our calls that we go on that are traumatic, right? Or death involved.
Yep.
And they have to get in their car by themselves.
I know.
And we can at least go, we may joke about it. Oh, that was crazy how that happened, huh?
Yeah.
And you kind of offloaded, and a lot of the time it's light. Yep. And I think it has to be at first. I wish it would get a little deeper sometimes. Like, oh, that bothered me.
Yeah.
But we're still trying to play the cool guy.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You joke about it or you make light of it or whatever.
Which is our way of digesting, but sometimes I think it needs to get deeper.
It does need to get deeper. And so luckily, I work at Syracuse part-time still. They signed up to do some counseling and to get some guys some counseling and stuff like that. Not EAP. This is a different type of counseling. And I went and did that. And that's amazing.
So is that your employee assistance program or no?
No, it's not.
This paid for by you or was it covered by the department?
The department picked it up. And I think there's a couple of departments that are around that are doing it. I think I heard Riverdale was doing it and Roy was doing it. I think it's Resilience or Regency. I can't think of the name of the counseling office right now, but they do
amazing.
Yeah, they do. It's actually the way they explain it is you're trying to flush bad. Your mind needs to process trauma. It doesn't know how. And so they have a way of processing it and allowing you to process it. And it's kind of crazy. Like you walk in and all the counselors I've ever been to is like, hey, let's just sit down and talk. And you talk about it and talk therapy. And that's nice, but it never solved the trauma, right? Mm-hmm. And this they do, it's kind of crazy. They do some eye movement stuff and you talk and you don't talk about it. You actually just think about it in your own mind. The lady that I sat with, she doesn't even know what my trauma was. She doesn't know the call that I was thinking about. She's like, I don't even care. You're just going to deal with it. I'm going to tell you how to deal with it. And we're going to let your mind
deal with it. Is it a teaching lesson that you can take home anywhere and you can process it anytime? Or do you need that coach to walk you through the process?
She walked me through the first one. I actually have another appointment this month to go do it again.
Oh, awesome.
They're like, we'll do it as many times as you need, you know, and you just come in and we'll walk you through this process and maybe look at it a different way. Or maybe that trauma's gone and we're going to look at a different trauma now.
What type of counseling do they call it?
It's called ART. It's an accelerated resolution therapy.
So for everybody, ART, if they're running through some of these struggles, look up, what was it?
Accelerated resolution therapy.
There you go.
But there's only certain counselors that do it.
So find one.
Yeah, you need to find one.
Scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it? How's it started to help you or what your mindset is?
It's a 10. I went from depressive, suicidal thoughts to like, I'm done, I can't handle this anymore, to wow. I walked out of the office like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Wow. That's gone. That's drained. It's that call that bugged me is gone. And it hasn't bugged me since.
Wow.
I haven't thought about it. So, and there can be more than one, there can be multiple different things and it can all bag up or just back up and back up.
But it teaches you how to process those, whether it be one or a dozen or two dozen.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, you end up getting quite a rack in 18 years, 20 years, I should say.
Yeah.
18 years, 22 of them being wildland.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. The, so you, when did you get divorced?
finalized last year.
Did it?
Yeah.
And, you were separated for a period between there.
Oh yeah.
Like a year.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So how's your relationship post that?
With my ex?
Yeah.
It's improved.
It's improving.
It's right now. I, there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of things.
18 years of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of unresolved stuff. There's a lot of things with my kids right now that I'm still trying to fix, trying to help them and fix that.
So but you feel like it's rather than having a spiraling drain, you feel like you're on an incline of improving it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is solution.
Oh yeah.
Right.
There's help out there.
And I think ultimately we get so tunnel vision, kind of like where you were, that we've hit now the very bottom.
Yeah.
Now there's no other answer than we just got to end this because we're there. I don't even have to dig this grave. I'm already this far down. No one even has to bury me.
Yep.
Right.
Just let it go.
But ultimately that is the bottom.
Yeah.
And there is answers and there is solutions. And then there is the brotherhood and then there's your family. They can step you through this process.
Yeah.
How is, you've known bipolar disorder for now 4 years.
Yeah.
Right. So how's that progressing? You feel like you're getting the right recipe for the medications?
Well, so back up just a little bit. When I threatened to kill myself, I decided not to. That night I was in a bad spot though. I was not in a good spot. Obviously I wasn't on any medication for it. All they'd take me off the mood stabilizers and stuff like that. So I was in a bad spot and my ex called my engineer.
Your truck engineer. So not a construction engineer.
Yeah, no. My driver engineer at the station. Yeah. Okay. She called him middle of the night.
Said something's wrong.
Yep.
Come get him. So you have a brother.
Yeah.
That comes down, says, hey, get in my car. You're not doing this.
Yeah. So we walked around the block and I was like, bro, I'm good. And he's like, no, you're not. Oh, hi. No, I really am. And he's like, no, you're not. And he's like, I'm not leaving until you go to the hospital.
Yeah.
I was like,
not doing this.
I've taken those people to the hospital.
I'm not that guy. You're not pink slipping me, dude.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. And he goes, no, I'm not leaving till we go there. This. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm not in a fight yet, so let's go get it figured out. Obviously, right. I'm broken. I need something. So got up, went up to McKay, sat in there, talked to them. And they're like, okay. And they shipped me down to a psych unit for a week.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody.
No, yeah. Don't keep it quiet.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, they take your phone, they take everything,
sure. Like
all your appointments, you're missing
everything. It is what it is.
You're just gone. And people are like, where the hell did you go?
How did that help you?
Oh, dude. It was good. It was good. It's weird to say to be in a psych unit that it was good. Cause they sit down and talk to you and they go through they start you new medications. They look at it and they're watching you and making sure you're good.
Right.
It's embarrassing as hell. Cause from our perspective,
sure. Like,
I've taken these people here. I know what's going on. You know what I mean? I'm like, right. I shouldn't be here. I got stuff to do. I got to go to work.
Yeah. I'm better than this.
You know what I mean? And I go from, I was working 5 jobs at the time.
Yeah. So that's too many.
5 jobs. So,
just FYI, again, try to afford to be a firefighter is more than just one job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
But, and I did it to myself. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Well, that's one way people like you that aren't lazy decide to make value, right? To bring value. You need to bring value or you're not delivering value. Yeah, so you, every minute of every day has to be bringing value. And I don't mean necessarily monetary gain. You're just trying to bring value to the world.
Right.
Yeah. All day. Whatever it is that you're doing has to bring value.
My brother told me today, he was, you need a hobby, bro. You need to find something to do for fun, not work.
Yeah, but that doesn't bring value. That's the answer that you immediately think of in your head.
Like, oh, I should be doing this. I should be at work. I should be doing this. I should be, no. So
I feel that way too.
Yeah.
Because typically it was really easy for me to pick up a shift at Weber. Like, oh yeah, New Year's, no problem. Yep. I'll be there. No big deal. The full-time fire guys need a break. I'll just move. I don't care.
Yeah.
And then the wife's like, really? You quit full-time fire for that?
Yep.
Right? You left full-time for that.
Yep. Now you're picking it up.
Now you're picking it up.
Well, that's, I mean, y'all, overtime comes out. You're struggling.
Right. Easy to pick it up.
Yep. It's like, man, that's good money. You know, I can go work that shift. What's your, it's the kid's birthday. We'll just bring him to the station. I'll have a birthday there. You know what I mean? It's like, no, you don't do that.
Yeah.
You know
what about a birthday party for the kids? Chuck E. Cheese or something. Yeah. Let's do some kind of event. Yeah. And it's hard to not get so far into ourselves when you end up, or when you're always paddling upstream financially, it's really hard to not feel like you're letting your family down.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, I want you to go to Chuck E. Cheese. I'll pick up the shift on his birthday. That'll give us the money. You can go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
That's just that's the reality
that
these guys are living in every day.
Yep.
You know,
one, I think one of the disservices we do is we assume everybody's good. You know what I mean? We hire them. Yeah. You'll figure it out, or your wife will figure it out. I honestly think we need to have a class for the wife. Bring the wife in. This is what your husband's going to see, or your wife or your spouse or whoever it is. This is what they're going to see. It is some crazy stuff, and they're going to come home and they're not going to want to talk, and they're going to be broken up, and you're going to go, what is wrong with you?
And why are you mad?
Yeah. Why are you not talking to me? Why are you treating the kids this way? Why is this? And it's, you just cut a guy down because it hung himself. You know what I mean? I can't tell you that, you know?
You can't.
So
we
can, but it's not, I don't think it's healthy necessarily.
No, it's not healthy. Those kids don't need to know. We had one in Roy. It was two brothers at the same time.
Damn.
Yeah. That hung themselves from the same tree.
No way.
It was crazy. I was back, pulled up on a site, and we're like, well, it looks like a Western movie.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but again, broken. We're like, whoa, look at that.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought, you know?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, that family, one of them lived.
Oh man.
One. And then the heavier kid lived.
Oh wow.
Right. Cause the lighter kid went up and the heavy kid came down. Right.
Yeah.
So now one of them lived, the other one didn't, but can you imagine the weight you're bearing? Right. And the family members to know that both brothers tried.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So you take that home and then you get overprotective of your family and your children. And then they're wondering, Dad, why won't you let me jump on a trampoline? Like, well, you don't even know what I saw yesterday on the trampoline. Trampolines are bad. Yeah. No, you can't roller skate. Rollerblades are out. Absolutely no longboards. Not happening on the longboard. Yeah. Never going to get a go-kart. No way are you getting a mini motorcycle. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Were you on the one in Weber where the two mini motorcycles and the dad and the two kids were racing together in the dark and they head on and they both had little kids in the front?
Oh, no.
So they came in. It was on 7500 West and they were barreling down the road. No headlights. But they were doing a pass, and the 2 and 3 year old kids on the front of the little mini bikes, and then the dads were driving, they just freaking barreled right into each other.
Yeah,
right. I mean, and so immediately you're like, oh yeah, mini bikes are out.
Yeah.
I mean, our poor kids, like, they get a shovel to work with, and that's their only toy.
Well, my brother bought those little. I don't even hoverboard little things. And I was like, you know how many house fires I've been on
because
of those things?
And freaking, like, batteries.
He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, bro. And he's like, I charge them in the kids' bedrooms. I'm like,
garage, concrete, outside.
You know, how many of those I've been on? And yeah, I mean, it puts everything in a different perspective. You know, it's like, yo.
Your wife's, your kids. Then you wonder, how do we love our job so much?
Exactly.
It's just one of those jobs that I think ultimately give you a sense of fulfillment.
Yeah.
While at the same is destroying you at the same time.
Well, and that's the thing, is like understanding that.
Maybe destroys heavy, but you know what I mean? It does mentally break you down, physically break you down.
Yeah. I think understanding that, you know, it's hard to say, hey, you guys have to go to a counselor. You have to go talk to somebody. You have to go do this. But if we can educate them why in that early age and understand why.
Make it part of the curriculum.
You need to understand why we're doing this.
What about a 6-month checkpoint? Like, hey, every 6 months, we're just going to have you go visit. It's just part of the curriculum.
Yeah.
This is part of your full-time job.
Yeah.
That you, and once a year or once every 6 months, you're going to go by yourself and then you're going to go with your spouse.
Yeah.
Right. Something that could help mitigate some of the long-term effects of the breakdown of the relationship at home.
Yeah.
The relationship with yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is at risk. And then the relationship with your kids, and bring understanding to the table. Like you said, this is what your wife's going to go through. That's a great concept.
Education is huge. Understanding why is huge. You know what I mean? Like, if you understand why you need to talk about it and what it does for you, you may not think it does or may not see that it does, but mentally your mind needs it. Your mind needs to relax and be able to talk about it with somebody that doesn't care, you know, and that you're not going to be judged at. That is one thing I like therapists for, is they don't know what you're talking about, but you're able to talk about it and they can't judge you. And you can just, but you have to be completely honest. You have to go in there and just say, all right, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm going to tell you how I'm feeling. And they don't know if you did the job right or if you did it wrong. They don't care, but you're able to explain to them what you're feeling and why you're feeling it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge help.
That's a good point though. You know, when I went to counseling with my wife, the first few visits, because we go separate, like the first visits, I went to Emil Harker, by the way, he's amazing.
Yeah.
And even for my one-on-ones, I send kids and counseling, you know, I've had a few friends that like, oh, I don't want to do that. It's weak. I'm like, dude, I do it. It's healthy.
It is.
You have to go.
Yeah.
Go visit. Dude's a stud. He pulls magic out of a hat. But the first couple times, to be honest, was like, dude, you know why I'm here? I said, my wife made this freaking appointment and I have no desire to talk to you. Yeah. I don't even have one. I don't even care. She's the problem, right? Yeah. She's a train wreck.
Yeah.
I'm great, right? Every way. And I think you think I'm crazy or over the top. She's wrong.
Yeah.
But then ultimately after, I think it was about the third time, is then I'm like, okay, let me. And then after that, he goes, man, so I thought you were great.
Yep.
So all in all, a lot of it was just the way you put things together. And then my wife, you know her. Have you met Shannon?
I haven't.
She's about the nicest, most pleasant person you've ever met.
She has to be. She's married to you.
Right. And that's the only way she's still here. But she's the best person in the marriage for sure when it comes to kindness. And when you see gifts go out that say our name on it, it's not me. And it's not that I don't support it, but I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Like, did you not want to get Chris something? You know, he had back surgery. I'm like, what? Sure.
Yeah.
Like, why did you think about that? Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, don't care. Well, are you going to go mow the neighbor's lawn? No. You know, he just had knee replacement. That's her. And when it comes down, when you break them down, someone that's just so resilient and kind, and then you start seeing them be mean and angry, boy, you're like, okay, this is a complete mirror back reflection of what I'm putting off.
Yeah.
They're only giving us what we gave them.
Yeah.
Right. They have to mirror it.
Yeah.
To get it off them. Right.
Yep.
And it's an unfortunate reality that we all go through, and hopefully you find the right one that you can get through with. And if you can't, then hopefully you can find the right one you can exit with.
Yeah.
Right. That's an important side too. It's not that every marriage should be forever.
No.
I don't think that's always the right answer, because at the same time.
Well, yeah.
Right.
And I don't blame my wife and what happened with us. Like, I don't blame her at all. Like, what she put up with and what we endured and where it ended, it sucks. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It is what it is. And a lot of that was just not understanding. You know, you're married to somebody for a long time and then they're diagnosed with being bipolar, and that explains a lot, but it doesn't fix it. It doesn't change it. And I've destroyed a lot of relationships because of it. You know what I mean? And not realizing it, but now I realize it. I'm trying to fix that and trying to work on it and
subdue it a little.
Yeah. And I think hopefully I want people to know it's okay to talk about it. You know what I mean? I want, there shouldn't be any shame in it. You know, there's a lot of guys I talked to, when I got out of the hospital, people were like, where were you? What happened? And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be honest. I'm just going to tell people what's going on. And, so I've talked to quite a few people, and I've had people come up and say, hey, bro,
dude, can I talk to you about something?
Yeah.
So you're an open invite to the local people that need to talk to you.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if they're struggling, It's a good place to start is people that are struggling the same way.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have a big, huge shoulder and a listening ear.
Yeah.
Right?
Kind of understand where you're coming from. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Well, a lot of these poor guys, like we're saying, they don't have an idea of where to start addressing it.
Yeah.
It's not clear. It's not understood. Most departments do have an EAP. And obviously some of them are having this ART, right?
Yeah, so that's amazing. That counseling group with the ART is amazing. Really good. It's way good.
But we offer, but again, these new guys, how do they know we even do it? We need to enforce it and teach it and show them the signs and symptoms. And
yeah. Well, luckily Syracuse said, they actually did it. How do you make you fill out this evaluation, right? How do we get guys to go online and fill it out and make sure they're doing it right? And they said, well, luckily Syracuse said, well, if 70% of the department does it, we'll give you $100 in your paycheck, you know? And everybody's like, $100? All right, I'll go in and do it. Yeah, you're going to do it too, because I want the $100, right?
Right.
And so it was really good. And I went in and I did it. And the other thing is, you got to be honest with it. You know what I mean? You got to look at it and honestly be open with yourself and say, yeah, I'm not going to deny that I've had suicidal thoughts, or I'm not going to deny that I'm in a bad place, or that I'm thinking about this, or I'm having a hard time with this. You know, I don't deny that. You know, I think the problem with the EAP for me is my experience is like, I called them and they're like, oh yeah, we'll help you with what? And I'm like, oh, I'm having marriage problems or whatever. And I call them and they're like, yeah, we'll get you in next month. Well, I'm having marriage problems today. Like,
yeah, I need help today.
Now, you know, and where do you find that help now? You know, like, other than going to the ER, well, what are you going to do? You know, and no one wants to go to the ER and say, yeah, I'm having suicidal thoughts.
Well, it shouldn't have to be,
you know,
right? Yeah. That shouldn't have to be the case.
No,
it needs to be somebody that maybe there'd be a peer counseling piece inside.
Yeah.
That there's like a, just like our HIPAA, yeah. Like you have a crew inside the department.
Yeah.
That's just.
And Weber does. Weber has a peer support thing. You can call them and say, hey, I'm having issues like this. You know what I mean? But getting over that, I'm embarrassed to talk to somebody. I'm embarrassed to call so-and-so and say, hey, I mean, in my darkest hour, like I wasn't thinking, hey, I'm going to go call my peer support guy.
You know, or my engineer.
Mean? Yeah.
Right. You're not.
Yeah. It's like, F them.
I know everything. Yeah. I'm not, they don't need to know nothing about me.
Yeah.
You know?
And then if I show weakness, are they going to trust me? You know what I mean? It comes back to,
can I be their captain if I'm weak?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a hard spot.
That's a huge thing.
Yeah, because you're supposed to bring the stability to the scene.
Yeah, you're supposed to be the strong guy, right? Yeah. So, and whether it's a captain, battalion chief, engineer, I don't care who you are, people are looking at you, making sure that you're supposed to be the strong one, right?
And stable and not losing your temper and being able to just say, hey, I need you to do this.
Yep.
I know this looks awful. Don't look there. Do this.
Yep.
Right. That's a hard place to be sometimes when you're not mentally there.
So then how do you go back to work? And they know this, you know what I mean? And it's like, there has to be an understanding like, hey, everybody has a hard time. Everybody goes through stuff.
I think as you mature, you start realizing that people that do that and do fix it are actually the strong guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad problem for even fire being ultimate, like A personalities and celebrities. They don't want anybody to know they're weak, which ultimately the sad part is everybody's weak. You just get stronger by fixing your weakness. Yeah. And then just like muscles, right? We break them down.
Yep.
And when you break them, they build. But you're recognizing, you're like, okay, that's a breaking point. I got to stop.
Yeah.
Now I need to call email or whoever your counselor is. Yeah. Dude, we have to talk.
Yeah.
I've got a curveball here and I don't like where my head's at.
Yeah.
When do you want me? And now I'm like, I need you tomorrow. And he's a stud because he'll do late calls.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Yeah. What's it going to cost? He's like, I really don't have time for a few days. I'm like, if I got a few hours, like if you can do that in a few hours, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's what it is. And he's such a good guy that he's like, fine. But the unfortunate side to that, and I'm going to, since I've given you all these props, Emil, I'm going to bump you up a little bit. It's expensive. He's $175 an hour.
I know.
And what does a fire dude do to pay a guy like that? And because his quality, he deserves his pay. And I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve that. But there's got to be some way to solve the disconnect between the people that really need it and the people that can really do it.
Yeah.
And the gap in the middle of the cost.
Yeah.
You know, because $175 for an hour guy is half a shift. It's 12 hours.
Yeah.
12 hours. On a good day for somebody that's getting paid okay.
It's crazy.
Right?
It's really crazy. Well, and that's why like, EAP is nice. No, don't get me wrong. I think if any of the departments or if there's anybody that makes that deciding factor that hears about this other opportunity and this other trauma, I mean, and that's what they deal in is trauma. They do specifically for police, fire, military. They're looking for that mental trauma that you're experiencing, that you've seen, that your mind is not digesting. Your mind can't get it out. And it's repeating it. You're having heart palpitations, or you're having nightmares, or you can't sleep, or you just reflect on it all day.
So did you have the repetitive of the same call, or did you not know what was causing these issues?
Was it
a call issue that you were dealing with for art? And I mean, if you don't want to answer, that's okay.
Oh no, it was a call.
And so that same call kept repeating itself over and over and over in your head.
I think about it all the time.
Do you really?
I used to. You until did. I started working through this trauma. We went on an old lady, amazing. She'd fallen down. She'd been sitting on the floor for 8 hours.
Yeah, it still bothers you, but you're it's a different
I'm working place. Through it, but sure. it still bugs me. But she'd been there for 8 hours talking to us, happy, just like, I can't get off the floor. And compartment syndrome kicked in.
Yeah.
So as soon as we moved her,
dead.
She did.
I had that happen in Riverdale.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was a bigger lady at the trailer park.
Yeah.
And she was laying on the ground. She was super, super friendly.
Yeah.
And I was with Curtis.
Yeah.
And that's funny. It's almost a scenario. And for me, I've never even thought about that call again.
Yeah.
It's weird how where we are in our lives affect it. But we sat her up. And as soon as we sat her up, she kicked over, right? Acidosis settles in into the cells. And then what happens when you sit them up? Your acid releases into the body. The body's been laying on the same place for so long. You don't have, you're either acidotic, alkalotic, or there's a pH balance that you're looking for. And when those cells burst from laying in the same place, we have a huge acid release. And once you move someone, circulation re-begins. My simple way of understanding anyway, is then all of a sudden it'll kick somebody over right quick. So, but what's ironic is I think depending on where you're at in your mental state at the minute you see the call,
100%.
A typical call like that is.
Yeah.
Typical.
Yeah. It's like,
it's just a normal call.
Well, and there's calls like it's a kid call. My kid's not at age, so it doesn't bother me or it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you or it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers the police officer or my partner. And I don't know what stage they're at in their life or where they're at. And now that call really bothers them.
Right.
And now they can't sleep. And now they're thinking about it every time we drive down that street. You know what I mean? Or every time we pass that house, I'm thinking about that call. And, I brought it up. We were at a training and I was like, yeah, hey, this is compartment syndrome. And I brought up that call. And
then you're like, broke down.
Yeah. Somebody, actually one of the firefighters, one of the captains now, he works with me now, but, he's like, I was on that call with you. I was like, you were? He's like, dude, that call bugged me.
Yeah, oh, it bothered him too.
It bothered him too.
Wow.
And he's like, he goes, it bugs me every time I drive by that house. I was like, it bugs me every time I drive by the house. And he's like, and we started just talking about it. And he's like, yeah, that's always bothered me. You know, and it's like, yeah. And there's other calls that bother me, you know what I mean? But we work through them or we get through them and your mind can digest and process them. But sometimes they get stuck.
They get stuck. The one, I have one call that's, and I've seen some ugly calls too. But the one call that bothers me, we were at the Roy Rec Center playing racquetball like we always used to do as crews. I don't know. We got called down to my sister's street.
Yeah.
Right. On a 2-year-old. And then we had dispatch on the phone and you could hear the Lexi in the background. Well, my niece's name was Lexi and she was 2 and this call was a 2-year-old and it was cardiac arrest. Right.
Yeah.
And so we end up leaving the Roy Rec Center, going down 4800 South, first train, right? School crossing.
Yeah.
This is like 8:30. So school crossing, have to shut down, go through the school crossing, next train, next school. Right. As we're going down, trying to just get down 4,800.
Yeah.
Well, we end up taking, I think around 7 minutes to get to maybe 180 second call.
Yeah.
Right. Get inside. Grandpa has the little girl that he's trying to get her to breathe. And she has some mucus on the side of her face and she's wearing a little crown that said princess on it. Right. And she's purple. We start doing CPR. I was with Bueller. Bueller was the 63 crew with Wadsworth. Bueller's working, doing a great job, right? And that was a great crew to go with all the time. And so we start going. Marla goes to intubate. We're going in there. She's asystole. Yeah, she was asystole. She's working her. Yeah. Go to intubate, and she couldn't get the intubation, right? We had the cheapest stethoscopes you've ever seen at the time. We always had some nice ones, but they disappear every time you turn around, so you'd end up with the $3 stethoscope you get from Hasbro.
Or the laryngoscope or the stethoscope?
The stethoscope. Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Your laryngoscope, but same thing.
No, you're good.
Anyway, instead of the Lippmann heart cardio twos, right.
Oh yeah,
they had the truly like a plastic.
Oh no, I know what you're talking about.
Piece, yeah. And so I'm like, I can't hear. She couldn't hear that it would have been intubated or not, and she's two, so we're using a little teeny tube. She's like, I can't tell. I think I'm missing it. So she goes, Barker intubate. So I tubed her really quick. We gave a few breaths, got her. Pulses come back, color comes back. We'd called the helicopter at the time. We were 19 minutes before pulses returned, right? And then the whole dramatic thing of the family shows up. And,
yep.
And then it's mom or the grandma fighting dad saying, it's your fault.
No.
And what had happened is she was sick and a little bit stuffy, and she just had a mucus plug that blocked off her airway. And nobody's fault at all, right? It's her time. Mm-hmm. But that one was when I had like her obituary on my locker for years.
Oh,
and it was one of those deals. It was just like, why? Like, this is one that we should have had. Why was there trains? Why was there school stops? Why did we have a cheap stethoscope? Why did this happen? Why did they have the stress of it being right across the street from my sister's house?
Yeah.
With the same name as my niece and the same age as my niece. So all those emotions, you're driving down the street waiting for those things to come together. And anyway, it was just, that was the one, I think, of all the other crap and trauma that you see.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a trauma, but it was traumatic.
It's traumatic, yeah.
Right? So, and it's funny when you brought up the one call, I'm thinking, oh, wait, the compartment syndrome. And I'm like, I guess it doesn't have to necessarily be a traumatic call to have it bother you forever. And that one bothered me for years.
Yeah.
And I think if I still think about it like now, it still does. But obviously, there's a reason that you just didn't get there. There was some reason.
It's just what it is.
It's not mine.
Yeah, it's not your fault.
And the hard thing to understand as a firefighter or a paramedic, anything that you do, it's better than where they're at.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, you're not making, if you have a dead person, they're dead anyway.
Yeah.
Right. The only thing you could do is try to make it better.
Right.
The chances of success are negligible.
Yeah.
Right. When you get into those scenarios, but whatever it is that you're doing, it's better than nothing.
Right.
So don't beat yourself up on it. Don't try to think you were better at it. Don't think that it was your fault that they died. Yeah. If they're dying, they're dead anyway.
Yeah.
The only thing you can do is help in the small methods that we have available for us to work in it. But we have so much pride in what we do, and we feel like we're in it to do this and save people that we take it home.
Oh yeah.
And then we let it eat us alive.
Yep.
Like, so you look back at your call, what is it that you could have really done?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Not a damn.
And I think it's just the sadness of life that bothers us the most.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little sodium bicarb, but that's never going to have enough to do anything to help that, right? But there's not much you can do.
Yeah.
So you can't beat yourself up, and it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
It's just you had to witness it, and you build a relationship with the patient before, you know, you end up moving them.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're like, all right, we're good.
Yeah.
Well, hello?
What's going on?
You know?
What happened?
And it's just, I think we're a little too hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing in ways because it helps us want to get better.
Right, right.
But we can't take it to the unhealthy way.
Yep. Another thing is like talking about it, like you're not invested in my call, but talking about it helps me and it doesn't hurt you.
Not
and that's what we need to understand is like, hey, you can talk about that and express those feelings in a judgment-free zone. You know what I mean? If I came back and said, well, you did this wrong and you did this wrong and you did this wrong. Well, now you're not going to want to talk to me anymore. You know what I mean? Or now you feel judged and you feel critiqued about everything. And so we have to be able to talk to each other and say, I'm not going to judge you, bro. Let's just talk about it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And sometimes that's hard with the guys that you work with and you can't do it there. You need to go to a professional or maybe you need to find somebody else you can talk to about it that understands, but isn't going to judge you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I think mental health, physical health all play a good scenario. And there was a time just a few years ago, I mean, you've built up over the last few years quite a bit. You got pretty heavy into fitness. And I think that's an important part of mental health.
Oh, it's a huge, important. Like, literally, I had a prescription from the doctor that said, you need to go to the gym every day. You need to do this. Your mind and your body need to be connected, and you need to work out every day. I was like, oh, okay. And I took it serious, and I was really into it. And then stuff happens.
Sure.
Things kind of start to unwind, and you kind of let it go, and then you kind of get back into it again. And I'm on the upward side of getting back into it, which sucks, you know.
Right.
I used to be able to lift this much, and now I can't lift that much.
Yeah, you got big there for a bit, and it's good.
There's a dichotomy, you know what I mean? You gotta be equal in everything.
Right.
So you can take anything to the extreme and cause issues.
I think that's a sad part of some of the fire service right now. You've noticed in some of the fitness levels and I'm not the crown prince, obviously,
right.
But at the same time, I do go to the gym every morning. I do the best I can to work out, whether I could do harder, I'm sure. But when it comes to work days, now weekends, I'm out. Like, I'm like, we had a Sunday, and you're like, you're coming to do CrossFit. I'm like, nope, I'm not. Well, you're coming. I'm not doing it. This is my Sunday.
I'll sit on the elliptical.
Yeah, I'll just sit over here and watch and do this. Hey, look at me. Yeah, right. Yeah. And you guys took it dead serious. But other than that, the 5 days a week, I think it's an important piece. And I think it needs to be more reinforced just a little bit. And the way Roy did it, I really enjoyed. And you guys may be that way during the week. I don't work a lot of weekdays.
Yeah.
But that whole crew going to the Roy Rec Center or going downstairs to the police officer's gym and working out as a shift.
Yeah.
31 and 32 would come up and we'd all be as a team.
Yeah.
And we did it. You did your book work by 8:30 and then you went to the gym and that's what you did. And I think it's an extremely important part of the whole equilibrium of what we're trying to do every day, whether it be mental, physical, and be ready for the call.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Well, the endorphins that you get and the things that get released in your body, and there's so much more to it. And I don't know all the terms and I don't know all of that, but it is so important to go to the gym and to get that physical aspect of it. Our job demands it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You go lift up. We just lifted up a 300-pound patient the other day.
You're like, I'm glad I worked out.
Tom's like, dude, she was a big lady. And I was like, yeah, she was. But I mean, that's what the public calls. That's what they expect. That's what we're going to do.
You
know what I mean? And so that's part of our job.
Yeah, for sure.
But the mental aspect of getting your mind to release and to get that chemical and to get those to help you. You know what I mean? It actually does help you. And it's huge for you.
My wife's a fit girl. Yeah. Like she's 5'7", she's fit. And then she, for the last like 6 months, she hasn't been going to the gym. I'm like, baby, you need to go to the gym. She's like, you think I'm fat? I didn't even, they don't even correlate, but her mental status, she gets more sad and buried into books and you see less activity, more agitated. When I say go to the gym for her, it's not like, hey, you need to go get a six pack. It's like, you're not all what you normally are when you work out.
Yeah.
You just seem to be a happier person. Go to the gym.
Yep.
You know, and it gets irritating at times. Well, why are you? Why didn't you do this? Well, I went and worked out. Well, freak, if you just do that. And I've decided it's much happier to have it's much better to have a happy wife that works out than someone that does whatever it is that she missed out for that minute that she was at the gym.
Yeah.
Who cares? It can get done anyway
yep.
at some point.
One of the other things is sleep. And that's one thing with the fire department. Yeah,
sleep deprivation.
Yeah. It was funny when I started seeing a counselor. I got out of the hospital. I went to a counselor and to a doctor. You know, he specialized in bipolar and mental illnesses and stuff like that. And Jasmer Health. Dude's amazing.
Okay.
Go in there and he's like, your first appointment's gonna be an hour and a half. I'm like, an hour and a half? I've never seen a doctor for an hour and a half before. And he sat down and he went over everything. And he's like, blood work, testosterone, all different types of stuff. And he's like, yeah, he spent an hour and a half with me. I was like, whoa, okay. This guy's serious. You know what I mean? And
where's he from?
They're in Layton.
Are they?
Yeah. They're amazing. And he deals with mental illness specifically and post-traumatic stress and bipolar and, schizophrenia, everything. He's a stud, but, he goes, how much sleep do you get? He says, oh, I try and get 8 hours. You know what I mean? He says, but I'm at the fire station, you know? And he's like, oh yeah. He goes, can you quit? I go, what? And he goes, well, you need to quit. And I'm like, I need to quit. And he goes, yeah, you need 8 hours, 7 days a week. He goes, at least 8 hours, if not 9 hours. And I'm like, what? And he's like, your sleep is so important to you. And guys just take it for granted. You know what I mean? We just run ourselves ragged. And I think we start young and we can go, man, we're going to burn the candle at both ends. And we're just going to go.
Then I'll work another department.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
Yeah. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to get off work here and I'm going to go do this. And he's like, you seriously can't quit? I said, I got 16 years in the system, man. I got 4 years left. You know what I mean? And he's like, oh no. This is, you really need sleep. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize it was that important. He's like, yeah, it's so, so important to our mental health. And I was like, wow. So, not on duty. I take a sleeping aid just to knock me out, like literally knock me out. He's like, you need the solid REM sleep. You're not getting it. Your mind's not getting it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy crud.
Man. So, but I think it comes down to that disruptive sleep cycle you live in.
Oh yeah.
That some nights you're awake all the time and sometimes you're not. Yep. And at Roy, before 61 came in and it was just 31 and we were stuck on the rescue for 7 freaking years, you know, with a few rotations to 32.
Yeah.
That's a disruptive sleep cycle. You're up all night. Many of your nights you don't sleep at all. And then you have to go to work your other job. And then you don't sleep the next night because you took a nap after work or whatever. You're screwed up.
Yeah. So it's all messed up. Well, and then you're on edge. Like, am I going to miss a call? Did the tones go off? How many times I woke up and I'm like, did I miss a call? Walk out and check the truck to make sure they're still in the bay.
Yeah.
Like, so did someone leave me?
That's a write up, right?
Yeah.
I had the best, Roy was good that way. They wouldn't leave. They'd tap your door.
Yeah.
Right. And they're like, are you coming?
Are you going to come on
this one? Like, I just can't find my freaking socks. Leave me alone. They're on your head, Barker. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know why they're there, but what an interesting and fun career, but at the same time, it is sacrificial.
Oh yeah.
You know,
that's what we talked to her about earlier, like volunteers, man. I love this job.
You do it again.
Oh yeah.
100%. You do 20 years.
Yeah. Some people say I'm too passionate about it and I don't know that you can be. Well, yeah, you probably can be just like anything else.
Balance, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love the job. I want everybody else to love the job. I want everybody to see how exciting it is and how much and enjoy it, what I do. And sometimes I push people a little bit too much probably, but,
you like fire more than a lot of us.
Oh yeah.
You love fire. You got passion, you know,
it's yeah.
But and what's so, great is to have a captain that loves it and knows it, yeah. Then you can. And then I like fire.
Yeah.
I like fire, but I really like a lot of the paramedical work too, yeah. But I like the balance of both. So don't get me wrong. I wouldn't want to run an ambulance by itself.
Yeah.
I do like to have the distraction of fire.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've done a great job of putting ourselves out of business in the fire world.
Yeah.
But paramedics was one that I'd like to focus on. But then I don't study as much as you have in the fire world where we can count on the people that do and say, all right, I can do the skill set.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with you doing the skill things like the tower the other day. That was amazing fun. That was a really good training that where we did the ladder training in the front entry and side entry. We haven't done that in, I don't know how many years.
Right.
That side entry. I'm like, are you sure you want me to step over that gap to get into the room? Right. Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing, at 47, it's different than when I was 27.
Yep, for sure.
Right? And I'm like walking over that deal. I remember not caring.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm like, oh, do I have the balance? Like, I don't even know if I have the balance to jump over that windowsill like this. You know, and it's just one of those things that I don't think I could ever trade out.
Yeah.
And knowing the sacrifice that you have to make, there's certain ones you'd choose rather not to.
Yeah.
But I think as you get to the end of your career, now you finally, not that you're going to stop at 20, but you can. So in our state, you can stop at 20 years in tier one and you're tier one.
Yeah.
Right. So you'd have a choice of being a 210 or a 220 or a 210-12er. So two people piss you out by 10, you're out by 12.
Yeah.
Right. You can do that in a couple of years from now. But a lot of people choose to stay longer, which is great if you're still young. And that's a nice thing with this career. It's just a matter of, what would you do it again? One, and how do you teach the people what you know now in a way that they will appreciate and understand what you're trying to share with them?
Yeah.
Like, dude, don't do this. Be open with your wife. Make sure that she understands what you're going through.
Yeah.
This is another thing. When you have mental kickers, you're going to, for sure, because what you do, here's how we deal with it.
Yeah.
And it's okay to be sad. It's okay to have a mental health issue, right? Because you have invited it in doing what you're doing.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And if you recognize it, get on it. As soon as you do, as soon as you start to realize like, hey, this bothers me, this is going on, like call somebody, talk to somebody, like, get that help you need. You know what I mean? Like, it's so important, you know? Yeah. And I think, like, not knowing the bipolar aspect and stuff like that, and not understanding that, and realizing that all of those calls were bothering that and changing me. And you think, oh, I'm going to be good. And you look at everybody else and you're like, why isn't it bothering them? It is. They're just not showing it. And mm-hmm. it's okay to show it. It's okay to let people know, hey, that bothered me, or this is bothering me, or this is going on. And maybe I'm not mentally in the right mindset to go on that call. And
I'm going to say out here, I'll get the gurney for you. Yep. Can I just run and do this? And yep. I'll be back. I'll armchair quarterback this back here.
And sometimes we run shorthanded and it sucks. I mean, we run two guys on a ladder or two guys on an engine, and it's like, dude, you're shorthanded. You have to step up and do that. But when we get back, we need to talk about this. We need to figure this out.
When you say, as soon as you realize that you're having issues, I think another key point is if somebody else is indicating yep. that you don't seem normal, or you don't seem like you're on key with your normal self. Like, hey man, something's out.
Yeah.
And listen to it.
Well, no, I'll go ahead.
No, just don't shrug it off, because they're good points.
Yeah. I think a hard thing is talking to someone if you do see it. I was talking to my brother this morning about, I was like, hey, I'm going to go talk and we're going to do this. And he's like, yeah, I've noticed. And this is my own brother. He's in the fire service. And he's like, dude, mm-hmm. I'm scared to death to talk to you. I'm like, if my own brother's afraid to talk to me and tell me that something's up, are the guys that I work with, are they going to be willing to? Are they going to be able to? Are they scared to death to
especially
talk
when
to
you're
me?
Their captain.
Yeah. Are they willing to call you out? And are you willing to be humble enough to say, okay, something's wrong? Like, I'm dealing with that right now. And it's like, okay, I got to step back and look at it. And yeah, my brother's like, you need to look at this from a different point of view. Cause he's like, I've been there. I've been on calls with you. And I'm like, you need to calm down. But he's like, how do you tell someone that? You know what I mean? And I think one of the things is just, if you do it in a polite way and just say, hey bro, something's bothering you. What's going on? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I can tell something's bothering you. Maybe you don't want to talk about it right now, but I can tell something's up, you know, and let's discuss it. Let's sit down and maybe get a third party in there. It's embarrassing, but sometimes that's what needs to happen. You know what I mean?
And I think when you do find out you have issues, the old inoculation theory works really well. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you go get the flu shot, you get a little bit of the flu, so you yeah. don't have the flu so bad. Well, when you have an issue that you can just bring to your team or who you work with, say, hey, by the way, I have this issue mm-hmm. that is a known issue.
Yep.
It doesn't affect my day-to-day work. If I come across crass, I'm really sorry. Yeah. Please bring it to my attention at the right time.
Yeah.
If I'm having my conniption at the call, please, that's not the time. Right. But when we get back, I'm more than open to talk about it.
Yep.
So I can at least start taking those steps to make those things better.
Yeah.
And if you start showing it by example, it'll make it way easier
yeah.
for your crew and your team members to talk to you about their problem.
Yep.
And you just kind of have to do that first.
Yeah.
Right. You have to lead the value, say, hey, I appreciate you more than anybody around. Hands down, I'm here for you. I understand you're going to go through marital issues, depression, sadness, tough calls, financial issues, right? I understand it because I've been here for 18 years.
Yeah.
And when you're here for 18 years, you're going to have this.
Yeah.
That comes with the territory.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, no, I'm here for you. Second, these are what I have.
Yep.
And this is what I'm going to need from you. And I'm going to have these issues with you.
Yeah.
And I need you to come up at the right time and talk to me. And we're going to sort through it when you feel like, and I mean, the right time is going to be the same day. It's not wait 3 months to address it.
No. Yeah.
Come up and talk to me when it's not at the call.
Yeah.
And let's have a little word, bring it out in a way that's professional.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to do the same for you.
Yeah.
Just kind of bring it out to them and say, hey, this is how I kind of want to address it. Yeah. We've done this here with our team. I try anyway to say, hey man, I'm open, I'm here. And be accessible. You saw my desk. It's in the middle of everybody else's You're desk.
Right, yeah.
I don't put a closed office. It's like, dude, let's talk. Can we talk? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was been a good conversation today, Chris.
No, same.
Is there any more things you want to cover a little bit? Is there anything you wanted to knock out of the park?
No. I know everybody says it like, hey, call me if you need something. But I'm serious. Like, if someone needs something, call me.
Yeah, big shoulders.
You know what
I mean? Doesn't matter where you're from.
Yeah, okay.
If you need to reach out, leave a message at the bottom saying you need a DM from Chris.
Yeah.
I'll get you your information. Yeah. I don't have to get in the middle of it, but please, we're here for you. Our brothers, our sisters in the police, fire, EMS. We relate really well with fire and EMS, obviously.
Yeah.
Respond to a lot of calls with cops. If you need something, you need help, you need people to talk to, we're here. I'm here. Chris, he's got a big shoulder. We've all been through this. You're not weird. You're not weak.
I don't look down on you.
No one does.
No. Nope.
We're just here to help, man. Last thing you need to do is go get yourself into a bottle or get yourself into a barrel. First and foremost, we don't want to see us lose beautiful people that are out there serving others.
Yeah.
There's a time that you need to be served. It's not all about you serving others.
Yeah.
There's times and people are waiting to help you.
For sure.
Right. And they look, not that they're looking forward to helping anyone that's having problems, but they're there. They're looking forward to a call that can prevent something more tragic.
Yeah.
Departments, all I can say is look into this ART program.
Yeah.
So one more time on it. Accelerated
resolution therapy.
There you go. Maybe worth looking at. Consider it. Whatever we can do. I think Chris's concept of maybe even having a spouse consult.
Oh, yeah.
I think that might be really smart, regardless of what happens on new hires and maybe periodic reviews throughout their career. It's a sensitive subject for a job that we love, and I really appreciate you tuning in today. I'm Jeremy Barker with 90 Proof Wisdom. This is Chris Wetton, Captain Chris Wetton at Weber Fire District. Amazing man, and really appreciate you coming out and showing all the difficult times that this job can do, but all the things that it does and helps us improve, and the lessons we learn make us bigger, better people, and hopefully the least we can do from there is help teach it downward and help others through those same struggles, because all of us are human and we all have them. And thank you so much for your time, and everybody have a wonderful year.
Thanks, Brady.
Yeah, appreciate you. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to 90 Proof Wisdom Podcast. Hopefully there was a takeaway for you. If you like what we're doing or even our efforts, tell your friends about it. Let us know what we could do better. Again, thank you for listening to 90 Proof Wisdom Podcast. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button.